She was very disrespectful to Joe Biden, and it's hard to pick somebody that's that disrespectful.
But Joe Biden did select that person Donald Trump was talking about to be his running mate. This is Thursday, the 13th of August, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, Hong Kongers react to the arrest of a popular newspaper publisher. Just where is the relationship between the United States and China going? You'll hear from someone with some expert opinions on that. The two major nations down under are reacting to different levels of a resurgence of the coronavirus. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Democratic presumptive nominee Joe Biden has chosen Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate, making her the first black woman and the first person of Indian descent to be selected for a presidential ticket by a major party. White House correspondent Patsy Wadakaswara has this story.
Could Kamala Harris be the next vice president of the United States? On Tuesday, presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden announced that he has selected Harris as his running mate in the November election, calling her a fearless fighter for the little guy and one of the country's finest public servants. Harris is the first black woman, the first person of Indian descent, and only the fourth woman in history to be chosen for a presidential ticket by a major party. A senator from California and a former Democratic presidential candidate, Harris said she is honored to be chosen and that Joe Biden can unify the American people. Analysts say Harris is a safe pick that would help Biden with a key demographic, African American voters.
Joe Biden is probably running just a little bit behind where Hillary Clinton was running in 2016 among younger African American voters, particularly younger African American men. So one of the things that she may be doing on the campaign is really kind of laser-like focusing in on that community to see if they can get support rates back to where they were in 2016.
Minutes after Biden made the announcement, the Trump campaign released this attack ad.
Slow Joe and phony Kamala. Perfect together. Wrong for America.
She was probably nastier than even Pocahontas to Joe Biden. She was very disrespectful to Joe Biden, and it's hard to pick somebody that's that disrespectful.
In the coming weeks, both the Trump and Biden campaigns will be competing to portray Harris to the American people.
There's still even about a third of Americans who would say that they don't have enough information to really form an opinion about Kamala Harris. But that's going to change pretty quickly in the coming days, and especially as we go into the Democratic convention. And her profile, even though she's already a U.S. senator, is going to increase pretty rapidly.
Patsy Wadakaswara, VOA News.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The top U.S. diplomat says China's global economic power makes the communist country in some ways a more difficult foe to counter than the Soviet Union during the Cold War. A new Pentagon report shows hundreds of millions of U.S. dollars appear to be doing little to dislodge Islamic State fighters entrenched in the Philippine South. The Taliban reaffirms its commitment to ending violence in Afghanistan while emphasizing that a comprehensive ceasefire still must be discussed. Vietnam's prime minister said Wednesday that the next 10 days will be critical in his country's fight against the new coronavirus outbreak. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Crackdowns against pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong took a very public turn this week. Authorities arrested a tabloid owner, marching him in front of cameras through the paper's printing operation in what has been widely decried as a blow to free speech. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the story.
Tuesday's headline of the Apple Daily newspaper in Hong Kong. Apple Daily must fight on. Newsstand owner Judy Doe says sales of the tabloid are soaring.
Yesterday's news makes every young person want to read the Apple Daily, even the ones who don't buy newspapers.
The defiant headline comes after authorities arrested the newspaper's owner and media tycoon Jimmy Lai, who Monday became the highest profile detainee under a new security law imposed by China. At a Beijing news conference, China's foreign minister praised Hong Kong's enforcement of a national law the government says targets those suspected of secession, terrorism, or collusion. Apple Daily customers say the new law is just a cover to repress pro-democracy voices in Hong Kong.
There were a lot of police officers raiding the newsroom. This situation is very serious and shouldn't have happened. So to support Apple Daily, I got in a cab and came straight to the newsstand.
Yesterday, the police brutally interfered with freedom of the press. All Hong Kongers with a conscience have to support the Apple Daily. Support Hong Kong.
Authorities detained the 71-year-old Lai on suspicion of collusion with foreign forces, a charge that could carry a punishment of life in prison. China's national security law was enacted in June. Western countries have condemned it. The Apple Daily printed more than 500,000 copies of its tabloid Tuesday, up fivefold from its normal daily press run of 100,000 copies. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, a U.S. military source says South Korea and the United States will kick off their annual joint military drills this week, but without mobilizing U.S.-based troops after scaling back the program due to coronavirus concerns. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. Tensions between the U.S. and China continue to escalate. Monday, China imposed sanctions on 11 U.S. citizens, including legislators, in response to the U.S. imposition of sanctions on 11 Hong Kong and Chinese officials accused of curtailing political freedoms in the former British colony. Among those targeted were Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. Also Monday, a Hong Kong media tycoon and democracy advocate became the highest-profile person arrested under the new national security law. Monday's actions follow the Trump administration's recent order for the closure of the Chinese consulate in Houston, Texas, and China's retaliatory closure of the U.S. consulate in Chengdu. VOA's Lori London asked David Feierstein, president and CEO of the George H.W. Bush Foundation for U.S.-China Relations, if he agrees with some analysts who say the consulate closure suggests things were reaching a point of no return between the two major world powers.
I think we have reached not only a new low in the relationship, but I do agree. I think we have reached a potentially dangerous inflection point. When countries start literally shutting down consulates, that is a different type of, just qualitatively, it's a different type of action. It's one thing to issue a blistering statement. It's another thing to answer a question in a press conference and use tough language. It's another to issue an executive order or pass legislation. But to literally shut down a consulate, as the United States administration did with respect to the Consulate General of China in Houston, and of course the Chinese reciprocated relative to the U.S. Consulate General in Chengdu, that starts to up the ante considerably. I found myself wondering whether this might be the first step toward formal U.S. derecognition of the People's Republic of China. I'm not saying that I expect that'll happen or that I believe it will happen. I'm not saying that what has happened so far is tantamount to that. But if the Trump administration were to want to go down the path of literally derecognizing the People's Republic of China and terminating the diplomatic relationship, starting by closing with a consulate would be a pretty natural place to start. And so I do think that it is literally unprecedented in the U.S.-China context. You just never see this type of thing happen typically outside the context of two countries that are about to fight a war with each other, where you might see countries evacuate their diplomatic personnel and shut down consulates or even the embassy. But in a time of peace, this is unprecedented. And I think it does take us a potentially very dangerous path. And I'm concerned about it.
There are reports that the Trump administration wants this escalation now ahead of re-election. He wants to be the president known for destroying the U.S.-China relationship.
I've seen that reporting and that analysis across discourse in this country. I think it is very plausible that that is the motivation. I've seen serious people from both political parties come to that conclusion. It's a reasonable conclusion to come to. I think that this administration clearly believes, as the Trump campaign believed in 2015 and 2016, that there is a broad national consensus around, quote, getting tough on China. And I think this administration seems to believe that doing all it can to manifest that toughness is probably very good politics at this stage of the 2020 race. You know, what's interesting about the closure of China's consul general in Houston is that virtually no public evidence has been presented by the administration to substantiate any of the claims that are made by the administration. It's one thing to say, look, here's the smoking gun. Here's the evidence. Here's why we're doing this. It's another thing to say that the evidence is merely the fact that we're saying that it is true. And what we're seeing is the latter. The administration is saying that the consulate did this and did that, and the administration is expecting that the mere fact that the administration has said that is sufficient evidence. Not saying that the activity didn't happen, but no one has proved that it has. So that suggests to me that there may very well be an element of pure politics as part of the decision-making calculus in this case.
VOA's Lori London speaking with David Feierstein, President and CEO of the George H.W. Bush Foundation for U.S.-China Relations.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Authorities in China have found coronavirus on the packaging of imported frozen seafood that arrived from the northeastern port city of Dalian, which recently battled a surge of cases. All of the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. A new cafe has opened up in Vietnam's capital city, Hanoi, but with an uplifting twist behind the mission of the new shop. Nguyen Tan Binh, owner of Cafe Cum Cat Rescue Center, set out to achieve two goals: offer a unique cafe experience to its customers and provide stray cats a safe environment. There are currently 15 cats that have been rescued by the cafe, either from abandonment or from injuries from dog attacks or accidents. Customers are able to enjoy their coffee at the cafe while playing with the cats. Nguyen was inspired to open the nonprofit cafe after spotting cats in cages and others who had been injured by thieves.
Some cats were lost from their homes and got into accidents, such as being bitten by dogs. Some cats were abandoned by their owners, or their owners could not afford the vet treatment fee. So I have my friends across Hanoi. If they see any cats like that, they will call me so I can come and pick them up.
With a rise in interest and popularity of the cafe, customers hope that other shops follow Nguyen's idea.
I really hope there'll be more cafes like this because Hanoi is a big city and there are lots of cats that got lost and injured in the city. So I really hope they have more environments like this to have a better life.
Amid the age of smartphone selfies, Foya's Purakura, an abbreviation of the Japanese pronunciation of print club, has been able to keep its photo booths relevant, especially with the rise in popularity around the world with the vintage appeal it draws. The Purakura photo booths have expanded on simply developing a photo strip for consumers, featuring an arrangement of retouches, enhancements, and adornments. They've remained hugely popular 25 years after they debuted in Japan, particularly with teenage girls and young women. Yuki Akita, a Foryu spokeswoman, explained how Purakura has been able to stay so popular with the younger generation with the photo capabilities that today's smartphones are equipped with.
There are many smartphone apps with which you can take pretty pictures. But to take a good selfie with a phone, you need a bit of skill. In a Purakura photo booth, everything is automatic with professional equipment and lighting, like a studio photo. You can take your pretty photos very easily.
High school students Nonoka Yamada and Soa Aikida explain what they personally find appealing of using Porakura booths over their smartphone cameras.
We can take selfies with our smartphones anywhere, and it's really easy. But we come out here and pay for the photos because it feels special, especially with the pictures printed as stickers and the images we can keep afterwards.
For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melvin.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Can the coronavirus survive in cold weather? Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you're sick or advised to by local authorities. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
We continue on VOA Asia. New Zealand is again under lockdown restrictions Wednesday after four COVID-19 infections were detected in Auckland, the South Pacific country's biggest city. They are the first confirmed cases of community transmission of coronavirus in more than 100 days. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In June, New Zealand declared a victory in its fight against COVID-19. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said the country had united in unprecedented ways to crush the virus. Restrictions were lifted and life began to return to what it was before the pandemic, although New Zealand's international borders stayed closed. But the coronavirus had not gone away. After more than 3 months without a local infection, four cases have been found among a family in Auckland. None had recently travelled overseas, and the source of the disease is being urgently investigated. Auckland, a city of 1.6 million people, is now subject to Stage 3 restrictions. Bars and restaurants have closed, along with schools. Workers have been told to stay at home, although staff in essential services are exempt. The lockdown will last for at least 3 days. Less stringent measures, including limits on gatherings and social distancing protocols, apply to the rest of New Zealand. The Health Minister, Chris Hipkins, told New Zealand Radio that the government wanted to avoid a surge in cases seen overseas, including in the Australian city of Melbourne.
We're taking a very, very precautionary approach here. One of the reasons that we're moving very swiftly and that we're moving to level 3 for Auckland very quickly is we want to do everything we can to avoid a situation like Melbourne. You know, one of the lessons from overseas is you can't be too hard too soon. The faster you move, the better your chances.
Ahead of Wednesday's lockdown, large crowds of shoppers were seen queuing at supermarkets, despite officials insisting that panic buying wasn't necessary. The World Health Organization had highlighted New Zealand as an example to other nations for having successfully eliminated community transmission. The re-emergence of the virus shows how difficult it is to stamp it out. Australia too has seen a resurgence of COVID-19 in some states, including New South Wales and Victoria, where a strict lockdown has been imposed. For VOA News, Phil Mercer, Sydney.
We continue with VOA Asia. The International Labour Organization reports school closures due to the COVID-19 crisis has disrupted the education or employment of 70% of young people aged between 18 and 29. It has led to severe job losses and increased impoverishment. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
A survey of 12,000 young people in 112 countries in April and May describes the devastating and disproportionate impact the pandemic is having on their education, training, and job prospects. The International Labour Organization finds youth in low-income countries who cannot easily access online learning are particularly hard hit, while 65% of young people in the richer countries were taught via video lecture. The ILO survey finds only 18% in the poorer countries could study online. The director of the ILO Employment Policy Department, Sun Jun Lee, says similar disparities exist in the realm of unemployment, where 1 in 6 youth in poor countries has had to stop work since the onset of the pandemic.
It's not just about the job losses. Even for those who actually remain employed after the onset of the pandemic, the working hours fell by nearly a quarter. And 2 out of 5 young people reported a reduction in their incomes.
The report finds the impact of COVID-19 lockdowns, job losses, and fears for their future are affecting the mental well-being of young people, with 50% reporting an increase in anxiety or depression. The report warns young people of this so-called lockdown generation are likely to suffer prolonged problems from the impact of the pandemic. The ILO is calling for urgent, large-scale, and targeted policy responses to protect a whole generation of young people whose employment prospects risk being permanently scarred by the crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We continue with VOA Asia. Face masks have made life a lot more difficult for one part of the population, people with hearing disabilities. They rely on lip reading and watching facial expressions to communicate with people who don't know sign language. But there is a solution. Maxim Moskalkov has the story.
Brenda Schertz leads the American Sign Language program at Cornell University. When the pandemic arrived, she hadn't anticipated that face masks would cause her so many problems. Deaf and mute from birth, Schertz realized everyday conversations with people wearing masks were almost impossible. Like Schertz, over 48 million Americans suffer from full or partial hearing loss and face the same problem.
Communication can be done without speech in many ways by using facial expressions, by using gesturing. And the mask suddenly blocks off that one route of communicating with people who do not use American Sign Language.
This makes a simple trip to a pharmacy or grocery store more difficult for people with hearing impairments. The pharmacist's faces are all covered by masks.
Those individuals who are working in stores, what I would say to them in terms of removing barriers is if somebody is not responding to your verbal comments, be creative, be compassionate, be patient. Think about why that person might not be responding.
Ann McIntosh, full professor at the University of Maryland Global Campus, that is suffering from congenital deafness, has developed a special mask with a transparent plastic window allowing a person's mouth to be seen. This is the first such mask that has been officially approved by FDA. The idea to make such a mask came to McIntosh many years ago, after she had to have an emergency C-section.
The nurse, the attending doctor, the anesthesiologist, and even my husband were all garbed up in surgical scrubs from head to toe, including a mask. And I was not able to lip read or follow along what was being said.
The little transparent window in the mask allows for lip reading and picking up on the person's facial expressions and emotions. Above all, these masks are needed in hospitals. Even before the pandemic, people with hearing impairments faced the problem of understanding doctors. But the current situation made things worse.
You could have an infant, a newborn, there for several days, weeks, or even months. They've never seen a human smile because everybody had been masked up. So that really does affect their ability to bond with others, whether it's a caregiver.
According to the data provided by the World Health Organization, about 5% of the world's population, some 466 million people, have various forms of hearing impairments and could benefit greatly from masks that allow to see people's faces. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter, at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day and stay safe.